I think sometimes this like yes man mentality, I talk to my team a lot, like, one, you have to win the client every month.
Yeah.
But two, we also need to just straight up own
right
when shit hits the fan.
Yes.
And it drives me crazy when we're working with a client and we've got shared agencies, and the only thing you ever see from them is positive. And they're like, oh, look at this,
right,
look at this.
Right,
and
you're right, like, right, right.
There's this glaring issue that's happening, and you're just not addressing it.
Yeah.
It's
gonna
come back and haunt you. Like, at least be real. Like, get into it with people. Take some responsibility. And you might get a 3.5-star review for it, but you're gonna solve a bunch of problems and you probably end up with that client way longer.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Caleb Potter and Life Unlimited Coaching. One of the best things that you can do for your personal well-being and your business, believe it or not, is getting your health and fitness on the right track. Caleb helps you do that by ditching the yo-yo dieting, getting the results you want, eating the foods you love, and living life on your own terms. In fact, she's even given our listeners today a free meal prep hack guide. You can check out that link in the description of this podcast. You can also check out all of her other coaching at lifeunlimitedpro.com. So go check out Kayla and get your life on track. Thank you so much for listening. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Frozen Soft Serve here in Utah. They service everywhere from Ogden to Nephi. And the best part is they make rentals super easy. They bring in the soft serve for you, the machines, they pack it out, and then enjoy their 7 flavors of Dole Whip and all of the soft serve that you can eat. It's great for businesses, customer appreciation, and employee appreciation days. And the best part is you don't have to do anything except call them and reserve it. So go to frozensoftserve.com. That's frozen with a PH. Check out the link in the description of this podcast episode. And thank you so much for listening. Yeah. All right, I want to start the podcast off something different with you.
You're gonna throw a heater at me. I know your style.
Well, yes, it's gonna be a curveball. It's not a heater, but it's a curveball.
Okay.
All right, we're gonna play a new game, only because you actually commented on this, and I thought it would be really funny. I posted on LinkedIn, and I asked the question. You remember, what's the craziest excuse you've been given by someone showing up late?
Oh yeah.
You said, "You're lucky I'm even here. I wasn't going to come, but my mom made me."
Yeah. I was a district manager at Zoomies, and then we had a security interview
at Zoomies.
Yeah, dude. So we would do inventory. And if the inventory levels came back above like 1.4%, we were like, the cat's working in the store stealing.
Yeah.
We called them security interviews, and everyone knew it. And we would pull the store manager, assistant manager, every employee one-on-one into the back room, and we'd like shake them down. Dude, it was like Bounty Hunter.
So, you're saying,
we'd be like, we know you're stealing. You can tell somebody stole. Yeah. Yeah. They might do $1 million in sales, but 1.4% of the inventory was missing. And so you're like, if it's above 1.4, it's internal. Like it isn't that the mall rats are stealing.
Yeah.
It's the store manager, assistant manager, staff, they're stealing. So you'd pull them in and you're like, look, man, we know. We had no idea.
So you
just, and we just like shake them down. And this assistant manager came in. And he was like, I'm sorry, I'm late, man. I don't want to come, but like my mom made me. And I was like, you didn't want to come because you knew what you did, right? And I didn't do anything. I swear. I'm like, man, the kid who doesn't do anything isn't afraid to show up.
Right.
Yeah, that happened.
Have you ever, go ahead,
story to that. And tell me if this is stupid or just edit it out, but I ran the stores in Vegas as well.
Oh, wow.
And we had a really bad inventory. And so I go down there, and usually you'd go in like the district manager and one other person would go in and shake people down because you didn't want them to accuse you of like, you know,
discrimination.
He said, she said, discrimination. Yeah, yeah. Okay. They like arm barred me, like any of that stuff, right? So I get there and the assistant manager, he's the first one. And the guy who's supposed to be there with me doesn't schedule anyone else on the floor.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, bro, I'm not supposed to go back here on my own. He's like, oh, you're fine. So I go back there and like, we legit knew this kid was stealing from us.
Yeah.
And I'm shaking him down and he just starts laughing at me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you laugh at, like, this isn't funny, man.
Yeah.
You know who I am?
Yeah.
And he laughs. He goes, yeah, I know who you are, but I don't think you know who I am. I'm like, I don't care who you are, dude. You've been stealing from us.
Yeah.
Like, you're going down. He goes, nah, man, like I said, I don't think you know who I am. You might want to go ask Sean out front before you carry on any further. So I'm like, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go call the cops.
Yeah.
And I walk out and I ask Sean out front and he goes, oh yeah, dude, that guy, his dad's in the mafia, like legit in the mafia. I'm like, wait, you just sent me back there
by yourself with this?
That this was going on? Like, that's what? Hilarious. So I walk back there and he's like, so did he tell you? I was like I said, man, I don't care. And he goes, I think he did tell you, and I do think you care. And I'm going to tell you how it's going to go right now. I stole a whole bunch of stuff from you. And I'm going to walk out of this store today, and you're going to help me take whatever I want, and then I'll just never come back. You're not going to call the cops. We're not going to have any issues. Or you can shake me down, and then I'll make sure that my family shakes down your family. We'll come after you. So I like go out and I call the founder and I'm like, yo, dude, this happened. I don't know what you want me to do. And he goes, what do you mean? Load his car up. Like, get him whatever he wants and get him out of the store. Take care of your family. So I helped the dude like $10,000 worth of stuff, like loading up into his car. Like, all right, man, see you around. Take care.
Dude, holy shit.
Zoomies was a trip, dude.
Dude, whoa. At Zoomies?
Ride. Yeah.
Aren't Zoomies employees... commission?
Stoners? Oh,
yeah. Stoners and commission?
Yeah, that's why. It's one reason why they're so aggressive. I don't know if it's still this way, but
I think it is. Like, I met a kid who was really, oh, when did you do Zoomies?
Oh, I'm so old, dude. Opened the Layton store in 2000.
Oh, wow.
And I was the DM. I was like, I ran Utah, Idaho, Nevada, whatever, for like 10 years.
Yeah.
So I've been out since 2010.
Wow. Okay.
But if you sold 100 extra bucks, you got, or if one sale was 100 bucks, you got 2%. But then what's crazy is any employee who sells 100 grand in a year gets a free trip.
Yeah.
And they like throw down at this party. Like, we went to Copper Mountain, Colorado, and they had little people dressed as Oompa Loompas riding elephants at Copper Mountain. You're like, what? You flew in an elephant? Holy, like, what?
Dude, so you got Copper, you got this story, you got a mafia kid, a mafia son.
Yeah.
Dude, that's wild.
The story's there.
Zoomies is crazy, bro.
I could do a whole few hours on like crazy things. I had a guy, he was an assistant manager. No, I had just taken over his store in this like new territory grab.
Yeah.
And he was a store manager. And I go up to his store. This is Idaho Falls. And he was like, hey man, I just want you to know, like, I'm going to prison for 9 months. And I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, I broke probation. I was smoking weed, like whatever. Well, I had to keep him on. Like, I couldn't fire him. So for 9 months we run the store without him. He comes back. He still got his job as store manager. This is not something I wanted to do, but like, okay, but you know, whatever. Well, like a few weeks later, his new assistant manager calls me and she's like, hey, I'm so frustrated. I haven't been promoted. I'm a second assistant. I told I'd be a first assistant in a month. And I'm like, well, you've only worked there a month. Like, that's crazy. Let's look at your metrics. Like, you're not ready to be. And she's like, well, I don't want to get this guy in trouble, but he told me that if like
with him,
and so I've been like, you know, hooking up with him, and I'm like, what? And she's like, yeah, after hours, just like on the couch in the store, like, you know. I'm like, what? So I call the dude and I'm like, yo, I'm coming up tomorrow. Let's have breakfast.
Oh my gosh.
We sit down and I'm like, hey man, I'm just gonna like say this. Tell me.
Yeah.
And I tell him, and he goes, oh yeah, man, totally happening. But don't worry, we're fine, because I'm not gonna promote her until she like earns it. But yeah, I'm like sleeping with her.
Oh my God.
So you're fired. And he's like, why are you firing me? I haven't done anything wrong.
You're like, what?
Like, these are the people I'm working with.
That's
what am I doing with my life?
What made you get out of Zoomies?
They fired me. That's no joke. I did not get along with my regional manager, and I took a vacation right after holiday. And she was like, you took an unapproved vacation. I'm like, we are on 6.5 days a week.
Yeah.
Like November 1st through December 28th.
Yeah.
I took a vacation. I was gone for 5 days. I'm back. My district's fine.
Yeah.
She's like, nah, you're out. So
oof, that's corporate America.
Yeah. So the founder, he was like a dad to me. Like I genuinely love this guy. He called me and he was like, nah, you're not fired. Come back. I'm like, yo, Tom, I'm not coming back to work for her. Like not a chance, man. You gotta shift territories. You gotta do something. And he's like, I can't. And I'm like, well, I'm out then. I've been interviewing anyways at Skullcandy. And he's like, wait, Skullcandy? Like, do you know Luke? I'm like, that's the dude I'm interviewing with. He'd be the guy who hires me. He goes, Luke was best friends with my son. Let me call him. Hold on. I get a call 5 minutes later. He's like, all right, man, he's got you. Like, go in there. So even on my way out, Tom hooked me up and helped me out.
He was just the founder of like the
Zoomies.
A few.
Tom Campion owned every Zoomies.
Whoa.
I mean, this guy's remarkable, dude. He taught me about being just a good person. Like, literally hundreds of millions of dollars this guy's made in his life.
Wow.
And,
if you founded Zoomies, dude, for sure.
So let's see. My daughter's now 18, but at 15 months old, she had a traumatic brain injury.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, doctors were coming in like, you got to go say goodbye. She's not going to make it through the hour sort of stuff. We didn't know what was going down. Tom calls me and he was like, look, I don't want to talk work. I want you to understand a couple of things. This is like 5 hours after it happens. Mm-hmm. Word gets to him. And he's like, I don't know if it's going to take you 3 days, 3 months, or 3 years to help your daughter get better. I don't care. You have a job. I will pay you full salary. We've got your district covered. If you need anything, you let me know. He's like, I haven't looked to know what our insurance will or will not cover, or if you've even opted into insurance with us. I had, but he was like, it doesn't matter. Any bill that you rack up for your daughter, just send to me and I'll personally take care of. We got you.
Whoa.
And he lived up to it.
Wow.
Such a good dude. Like an incredible human being. I later joined his board for his nonprofit and he told us privately, like, if I die with a dollar to my name, I've lived an immoral life. Help me give it away.
Hmm.
So Zoomies had some weird things about it, but most of the people there, the leadership there, just salt of the earth, kind of good people, great. And really showed me that if you take care of your team, they'll take care of you.
Yeah, everything.
Yeah, it's why I stayed for so long. Like, I didn't want to be selling t-shirts or dealing with dudes that are getting out of prison and boning their assistant. But everything else about that culture and that team was remarkable.
Yeah. Wow, dude, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And it's stories like that that just make you want to earn $1 million that quicker so you can be like that. You know what I mean?
For sure. Okay, so I totally agree, but I've also started to realize if Tom didn't have any money, he'd still find ways to give back to people.
That's fair.
He'd still have ways to help. And so having a startup company and I'm bootstrapped. I've never taken on investment. I've never taken a loan. Every dollar that sits in our bank account, we freaking earned and we fought for.
Yeah.
Blood, sweat, and tears.
Yeah.
But then it's like, well, how can I... What other ways can I help my team the way that Tom did? And it kind of forces you to be creative. It forces you to, like, I think, get to know your team more, really understand what works for them. And even with a small team, there's like 12 of us. What I do for Adam or what I try to do for Adam is very different than the things I try to do for Kinsey. I'm not great at it, but I do think about it a lot and I try to act on it a lot in going, how do I just make sure that this is not just another job for these guys?
I like that. And I like what you mentioned there because I think that's a really important principle for just life in general, which is like, the best example that I've ever thought of in my head, just because of like the finance side of my brain, but like, it's the idea of winning the lottery. Like, how many millionaires are still millionaires after they win the lottery?
Yeah. Not many.
The answer is zero. The answer actually it's zero.
Really?
Yeah. Like you go from, because who wins the lottery? Most of the time it's people who don't have any money anyway.
Never managed that kind of money before.
Oh yeah. They've never even seen that. Right.
Right.
And so you can't say, well, if I get $1 million, I'll know how to take care of it. If you don't know how to take care of the $1,000 a month that you're getting from this job or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of the same thing with like giving. Like, you're not going to give if when you have $1 million if you're not giving now, or like when you don't have any, you know, it's like the, because your personality doesn't change.
That's so, that's super interesting. And it does make you kind of take stock in
what you have, how
you can give. And if you think about it, I think you can find ways that maybe in some sense are more meaningful than cash.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that Tom was like, let me pay your bills was one thing. But the fact that he called me and he was like, we got you. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm here for you. The fact that afterwards he asked me to sit on his board and help him give away money to other people. I don't know, like that meant more than the money. Mm-hmm. The money was, dude, thank you. Cause I'd probably still be paying for that.
Yeah.
You know, it was no joke. She lifelighted multiple brain surgeries, coma for 31 days. Like she was messed up. Mm-hmm. But it was more than that.
Yeah, it was the idea.
That was nice, right? That was nice, but it was everything else that he did that he didn't have to do.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that's the kind of the idea behind giving is like, and just that idea, because a lot of people think just what I was talking about, like, you know, when I have it, I'll do it. But it's like, not really, because you didn't even call your buddy. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you didn't even, I don't know. It's just, I always think about that kind of stuff because it also makes a big difference when people are like, you know, when you like take stock of like who your friends are. Right.
Yeah.
Cause sometimes like you were mentioning, it's like not even your friends really. It's not even about getting money or something like that. It's about, you know, whatever. Oh, is that mine? Oh, probably. Oh yeah. Okay, cool.
You're the popular one. But you know, my phone's, my phone's eerily silent.
But you know what I mean? It's kind of like, if you're not, it's kind of like when you get to the top, who are your friends at the bottom? That's who you bring with you, right?
Yeah.
Like,
you got to shove that elevator back down. You know? Like,
yeah.
Help people back.
I think everybody gets on. Yeah. It's just wild, dude. But if you're just not, I don't know, if you can't learn how to be a good person when you don't have anything, it's not, you're not probably not going to be a good person when you get it. Right.
I don't think so.
Cause I heard money is like a magnifier. Like that's the cool thing I learned about.
Really?
Like a magnifier.
Okay, in the sense that good or bad, it kind of like accentuates your character traits.
Yeah, because I don't think there's let's explore this for a second. Because I've read all the damn books and all the, you know, influencers about like how to get rich, right? And it's just, I know everybody is like, oh, there's a secret, there's actually a pattern, there's the steps to success, but like, I don't know, dude, you can't really boil it down. You just got to keep working for it. But, because like it doesn't, all of the things that an influencer will tell you doesn't answer the question why some just assholes get rich.
Or why some of the hardest working people
never
are grinding to make rent.
Yeah. Some of the nicest, sweetest people. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I have a friend, I've known this guy 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
You look at his resume, every 6 months he's getting laid off.
Yeah.
He's a part of a riff. He's fired. Like, dude struggles to take care of his family. But if you needed something, you call that guy. It doesn't matter what, it could be his first day of his new job. And he'd be like, I'm there.
Yeah, I'll be there.
And when he's at a job, he's hustling, he's grinding, he's working. Mm-hmm. He's had just unfortunate events over and over. And he takes ownership of some of those things. Mm-hmm. But like, to see that he struggles and just make this assumption that he struggles because he doesn't work hard.
Or has the wrong mindset. It's like, that's stupid as shit, dude. That's not
true. It is. I mean, I've in my career and in my personal life, I've had real moments of success and I've had real moments of despair.
Yeah.
Both.
Yeah.
Right? Like, why would I have both?
Yeah.
It's life's much more fluid than that. I think things just happen sometimes.
Yeah, for sure.
And you know, I don't know. You do have to take ownership of like, I made this choice, I decided this, or I did that, or I didn't do this.
Yeah.
But that's not to say that people that don't have a high paying job or a high profile role, that they're any less hardworking, diligent, thoughtful, caring, you name it.
Yeah. Like,
to your point, I know some real assholes who are rolling in cash.
Yeah, and you're like, I wouldn't call that dude if I was drowning in the ocean because I, you know what I mean? Like, I just, it's just not. And so, yeah, that money is a magnifier, right? It's either going to make you more of an asshole or it's going to make you more generous. Like,
yeah,
it's either going to make you, shut everybody out or welcome everybody in. And I don't know. And I get some heat for that every once in a while. Like, no, there are steps to success and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, the only common denominator I've ever picked up on is networking. No, that dude, I know why that dude got $1 million. Because he knew somebody who knew somebody and wasn't afraid to talk and then met this guy.
Yeah.
Like that, and that's fair. That's fine. Like, I didn't know that guy. You knew him. You got it, right? Okay, cool. Whatever. That's pretty much, in my opinion, that's like the only one that I ever, that's the only real one that I ever tell people, like, what's key to success? I'm like, talk to people.
Yeah.
Just talk to as many people as you can.
Well, and I think it's people who network but have, it's backed in authenticity. It's backed in getting to know someone. Mm-hmm. It's not networking to necessarily try to raise that cash or get that cash. You know, I've seen you on LinkedIn for a long time. I saw you at a Tacos Together event. You were wearing a jacket that just like blew my freaking mind.
Oh yeah, buddy.
And we had like a 20 second interaction?
Yeah, dude, I was all over the place. Yeah.
And then I think I reached out to you and I was like, yo, we should go to lunch one day.
Yeah.
And you came down and I'm not just blowing smoke because I'm sitting in your podcast, but like, I just thought, dude, Dalton is just a good dude. Like he cares about people. He's honest. He's real. He's not afraid to step on some toes. But it's not like mean, you know, it's just like, and there's this attraction to that. There's this draw to that. Oh, yeah. And I think what makes you a good networker. That's what makes people want to be around you is they don't feel like there's some motive, you know, I didn't ask you to go to lunch so I could be on your podcast 2 months later. Like,
That
wasn't it.
Yeah. But man, we talked forever after that. That
we did.
But what was that Rock Taco? Dude, shout out Rock Taco. Dude, those guys are freaking.
They got to take care of that so one cockroach good. Issue that we ran into, though.
That's what made it good, in my opinion. I was like, this is 3.5 stars. Did you see that guy? He was like, how do you know if you have a good like Mexican or Chinese restaurant? He was like, 3.5 stars. He's like, anything less.
Just dirty enough.
You see, he's like, 3.5 stars. If it's 4, they treat you too good. They're forgetting about the food. he's like less than 3.5. The food's probably not that good. He's like 3.5. That's it. Rock Tacos. 3.5.
I kind of like that, dude. That's a good 3.5. Specifically for Mexican food.
Yeah. 3.5 stars. Yeah. That's it. And Rock Taco, 3.5.
Yeah.
Because that's the perfect. That's perfect.
I mean, clearly I like food, but I have some weird rules. Like I won't go anywhere that they sing you happy birthday. Like, dude, if you think you're going to catch me at Texas Roadhouse, where they put your ass on a saddle.
Yeah. I told my wife,
no way.
I told my wife, I was like, if you do that, I'm going to leave screaming.
Ain't no way, dude.
On the phone with 911.
Yeah. People are like, let's go to Chili's. I'm like, oh.
Well, our conversation earlier about the South, Chili's and Applebee's, that's a delicacy, bro. That's a night out, dude. That's a business event. You like the Office?
I do love the Office. You remember
the Chili's episode? He's like, where are we going to go close this big deal? He's like, Chili's.
Dude, I'm going to wine and dine the hell out of you. Yeah, I just can't. I don't want to go chain. I don't want to go to the same. But I will definitely roll up to like the hole in the wall.
Yeah, dude.
Taste of India and Layton. That family knows us, man. We walk in there
heck yeah. Dude, Taste of India and Bountiful is...
Okay.
Really good too.
I got to tell you though, the one in Layton smokes the one in Bountiful.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, let's go.
And like the 13-year-old daughter who serves there, I'm always like, can I get a drink of water? And she's like, I don't know, can you? And
no 3.5 stars.
And then let's she brings me a drink of water, but it's like, she like throws it on the table and I'm like splashed. It's like, I'm sitting front row of SeaWorld, you know?
Dude, that's perfect.
But I freaking love that place.
Yeah, dude. Well, that's what I like about it. I think I was like, whatever, dude, this is why we pay for it. This is the experience. Like,
yeah.
I've been to 5-star Mexican restaurants and they're not anything, I'm like, I'd rather go to Rock Taco.
I'm so with you.
Dude, that's the food. That's the food. But it's, you know, 3.5 stars, man. And I use that kind of like in my life. I don't like to be like in sales. I always say the best salespeople don't have 5-star reviews. Cause if you have a 5-star salesperson,
you're probably
got a yes man. You got an order taker. Yeah. You got like, oh yeah, whatever you want. And he or she's only selling to people they know they can get a deal, and they probably don't have a high, you know, PVR, which is like price, whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's so interesting. I think sometimes this like yes man mentality, I talk to my team a lot. Like, one, you have to win the client every month.
Yeah.
But two, we also need to just straight up own
right
when shit hits the fan.
Yes.
And it drives me crazy when we're working with a client and we've got shared agencies, and the only thing you ever see from them is positive. And they're like, oh, look at this,
right,
look at this.
Right,
and
you're right, like, right.
There's this glaring issue that's happening, and you're just not addressing it.
Yeah.
It's going to come back and haunt you. Like, at least be real. Like, get into it with people. Take some responsibility. And you might get a 3.5-star review for it, but you're going to solve a bunch of problems, and you probably end up with that client way longer.
Yeah. Well, I think, it's just like, and the salesperson who doesn't have a 5-star review said no a couple times. You know, he was like, no, I'm not going to take that deal. That's a bad deal. You know what I mean? And made somebody mad, or they asked one too many times, because that's the salesperson's job. You know, they weren't afraid to foul out a little bit. And because I mean, at the end of the day, this is why one of my hot takes on sales is like, I'm not a huge fan of like the relationship selling. Like, I think you can sell with empathy, and I think empathy builds a relationship in a sense, but that's not, because I mean, I hate selling to family and friends.
Yeah.
It's so hard. Cause you're like, freak, I'm going to, you know, this is the best case. This is the general scenario. I know like everybody's like, oh, pay full price from your friends. But this is actually what really happens. You give your friend a deal. They don't like something. They're like, no, he'll fix it. And they won't. And I won't pay any more money.
And then you're resentful on the other end.
Right.
For
dude,
it.
And you're like, what the freak?
I'm already doing this guy a favor.
Right, dude.
Like,
yeah.
Now they're taking advantage of me.
Yeah. What favor? We're talking about, we're family. What the hell? And it's like, no,
Wait, did you just pull like a Cartman?
Yeah, that's right. I love Cartman, actually. Okay. I love South Park.
I just can't hold back any longer.
All right, right.
Two things.
Yeah.
Is this like my ticking clock?
No. I have ADHD.
You do. And you need that just to like.
I just like play with it.
Okay. The other thing I just saw was someone was like, when I die, I want to be cremated and put in one of those so I can still participate in family game night.
Dude, what the freak?
You're like, grandma's time is ticking, dude.
No way, man. I'm not doing that. That's gross, dude.
Well, I'm not doing that either, but I'm not going to get buried.
All right.
No joke. I've been exploring being frozen.
All right, cool, dude.
Yeah.
Right on, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like at a facility?
It's like a real thing.
They just freeze
It's
you?
A real thing. It's not that much more expensive than a regular
burial. They just hold your body and...
Yeah. Because if you think about it, like, they already know how to freeze life and then bring it back. That's what they do for IVF.
Oh, yeah.
What they don't know how to do is rewind the clock on your DNA and your genetics.
I was going to say,
you die at 80, they bring you back. They can freeze you, but when you're 80 and they can bring you back in 20 years, you're still going to be
80.
Like 80.
Yeah.
But the way that science is going, dude, in 150 years, 200 years, whatever, I might be Fry from Future Guy. Yeah. And they bring me back and they're like, he was 80. Now he's 25. I'm like,
I don't know, dude.
I have one thing that's holding me back from like actually pulling the trigger on this.
All right. Let me hear it.
And that one thing is, how horrifying would it be if you were frozen, but you were still like cognizant upstairs?
Oh, yeah, that'd be terrible.
You're stuck in your own mind for 300 years. Dude, they're unfreezing you and you ain't normal.
No. Well, and I was going to talk about like, what's consciousness at that point?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's trippy.
I don't know.
Well, and like, I don't know. I think, I don't think death is necessarily a bad thing, right? Like...
We could go deep
you
here.
You could go wherever you want to go, bro. I can handle it all.
I want nothing more in this life than to know that there's life after. I want eternity with my family. I want to, like, you know, be with my wife and my kids and my wife and my kids.
Like, yeah.
You know, everyone else. Like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
But there's a real part of me where I'm not sure that just because that's what I hope for, that I can say I actually believe that that's real.
Yeah. Well, I think that's okay.
It's a little morbid. It's a little scary. I mean, last night I'm laying in bed and I'm like, my wife's like, you okay? I'm like, I don't know. I think I'm having a panic attack. She's like, why? And I'm like, because I was thinking about the year 2080. And then I thought, oh, I'd have to be 99 to be alive in 20. I ain't making it 2080. Am I going to make it to 2070?
Am I going to make it to
2060? And you start thinking about that. And then you're like, well, 2060 is not actually that far away from here.
No. No.
And it just, like,
blew you away.
Dude, it gave last you night was rough.
Tripping, dude.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, man. But even that, I think even more than that is like, dude, rest in peace. I don't know this guy, but I'm going to talk about him for a second because it tripped me up. There have been at least four people in my circle who've passed away. And a couple of them have just, like, one of them was a brain aneurysm. Oh. They're saying it was a brain aneurysm while he was asleep. And I'm like, and those are like, if you get it, you get it. If you don't, you don't.
Yeah.
They're like, science is like, here's how we know.
Like, yeah.
you know what I mean? Like, that's it. And I was just
thinking. And you only know after. You're like, well, right. He had it.
Yeah, he had it. Yeah.
Too late.
Dude, I read, because I went down the rabbit hole on that. And I was like, bro, I was like, how do you know? And they're like, they legit on, you know, the whatever the article was I was reading, medical journal, it was like some people live with a brain aneurysm that hasn't an unruptured brain aneurysm their whole life. Some people just, and they never know. And like you, unless you go in and you're like, I want to get this checked or whatever. Yeah. But I was thinking about that and I'm just like, one day you're out, dude. And that, I don't know. That's why I love stoicism, the philosophy of just like memento mori, which is just like, dude, we all got a clock and you don't know when it expires for you.
Yeah.
And so
it definitely makes you appreciate the days more, I think.
Yeah. And I think I was just having a conversation with somebody about this because the Stoic philosophy at that point would be, you know, if you could leave life at any moment, let that dictate what you think, say, and do. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is then as a parent, right? So I gave this example the other day. I was like, all right, so your daughter does something wild and she spills milk on the table, like just being reckless, right? Now, if you ask yourself that question, you were serious about it. It's just like, she knocked over. She's a kid, whatever. But like
in the moment,
but here's where it gets even more trippy. Like if you ask yourself that question, you're like, I'm not going to get mad at her because it's spilled milk. If I die tomorrow, this isn't the last thing I'd want her to do. Right. But if you take it one step further and you go, but I'm probably not going to die tomorrow. And this reckless behavior needs to like be addressed or whatever. Then how would I want that conversation to go if I knew that I was going to live and I know that I needed to correct my daughter? And then it goes, well, I'd want her to know while I was correcting her that I loved her. And it was all because of love. It wasn't because of hate. It was because like, if I leave, I want you to be a better person. And yeah, this spilled milk doesn't really mean anything, but that's not the point. The point is I love you and I want you to be a good human being and you got to look when you're flailing your hands, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like that's where it got trippy for me. And so it's interesting because you don't have to not say those things. You just have to say those things with love now.
I really like that, man. When you start talking about love, I've been on this trip lately with my kids. Not that I don't tell them I love you. I say it all the time.
Yeah.
But I've really tried to shift how I say it and just the reverse of I love you, which is every night when I tuck my almost eight-year-old now in, I ask him, his name's Theo. I'm like, Theo, what's the most important thing for you to remember? And he goes, that I am loved.
Mm.
So I try to tell my kids, you are loved. Instead of I love you.
Ooh, I like
right?
that.
Which,
yeah, I like that.
And I think, look, I grew up and I think I grew up with a narcissist parent. And sometimes when that parent would tell me I love you, it actually felt like it was about them, not about me.
Mm, yeah.
You know, like, don't you understand how much I love you? I would do anything for you. And you're like, is it about you and your emotions?
Yeah,
or is it about
that's right.
me experiencing being loved? And I think it's nuanced, but I do think that it's different.
Yeah,
So I've tried as a parent the last year or so to really put that back on them. Like,
yeah,
you are loved. Not that, and, or things like, I care about you, but you are cared for. You, yeah. Or I even flip it and it's like, you matter to me.
Mm, yeah.
Right. And try to, yeah, I try to put lead with the you as opposed to I. And I think, and maybe I'm just drinking this Kool-Aid and it's, you know.
No, I like it. But, I like that thought.
But I think my kids appreciate it. And I think that, yeah, that it does make a difference and it does change things. And it just goes back to this idea of like, why are you disciplining or why are you coaching and why are you teaching them these things, whether you're going to be here today or later? It really, yeah, is about them.
Yeah. And it's like, I want you to be better, right? Yeah. As a person, right? So I'm going to correct this behavior.
Yeah.
Not because I'm trying to be a dick, but because I want you to be
I would even argue it's maybe not that I want you to be better, but like, I want you, yeah, have potential and you can reach more than you've reached.
Mm, yeah.
You can accomplish remarkable things. And my job as a parent is to be the guide. You know, it goes back to like, as the parent, are you the hero or are you the guide? It's marketing, they talk about this a lot. Like, yeah, the brand isn't the hero. The brand is the guide. Let the customer, yeah, be the hero. Well, it's like kind of the same thing with your kids. Let them recognize their potential and you're there to coach and guide and steer, but it's not about you making them anything. It's about, yeah, them making themselves.
Yeah. That. I think that's why you put them in certain situations. Like, I purposely, sure, put my, you know, kids in situations where they got to like, where they're almost like forced to fail. Right. Cause it's just, you know, that's great.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. It's great.
I don't think we teach our kids to fail enough right now.
Okay, but you know what's
this,
so
like,
funny?
Trophy for every participation, and I just like, I'm like, dude, look, dude, you tried and you played hard, but you didn't win, and that's, yeah, okay, but you ain't getting no trophy.
Yeah, but you know what's so funny about that whole concept is like, here's what I really don't like about, maybe it's the Western culture just in general, but we have all of these stories and these myths and these legends that we teach our kids, right? So, and a lot of people in my church don't like when I say this, but so you got like the myth of Adam and Eve, whether it was one person or not, I don't care. But the story was there to teach you a lesson, and it was the lesson. And this was the lesson, right? So a lot of people are like, we don't really do that. Well, you just don't let them learn that lesson, because a lot of people have a problem with that story. Well, the biggest problem is, God put them in a position to fail. Right. So if you believe that, if you like that story, that was the story, right? It's like, yeah, he knew there was no other choice. Like, we gave him a choice. But that's what we do as parents. Like, yeah, I'm gonna. And that's what life does to us. I mean, the whole myth is about us in the world and our place in the world, which, mm-hmm, is where, you know, I don't need to get too deep into it, but
it's okay to fail. It's a part of life.
Yeah. Well, like, and you eventually have to leave the Garden of Eden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless you get frozen. And then they bring you back 300 years later.
But like,
and I'm dating a woman with one eye.
An alien or whatever, they come back.
This Cyclops, dude, but you know, is so hot.
But dude, but it's so true. Like,
and my best friend is a robot now. Actually, that might actually be happening any day now.
Neuralink,
you play around with ChatGPT, and I'm like, I think I have a new friend.
Oh, dude, I thought you were talking about, did you know that Neuralink, what Elon Musk is working, the brain computers?
He's going to put that chip in your brain, right?
He just got, the FDA just approved human trials.
Okay, so
for Neuralink.
Would you be that trial?
Nah, I wouldn't be, but I don't know. I don't think I would either.
You would be a trial? I'd at least want to know that it worked. Like,
they're like,
if it works, I got it done for free. If I die, my family will sue.
then they get the money.
It's a win-win.
But I don't knock anybody for doing it, but I wouldn't do it. So
I wouldn't. Not this early on, at least.
Well, I just think
we're already cyborgs, dude. I mean, we've got our phone and our watch and our VR headset and our.
Like, yeah, it's going to be trippy. Did you see the Apple glasses? Did you see
that? Yeah. Whoa, it looks like you're going to go snowboarding.
Yeah, you know what I think Apple did does a really good job of? I think they just make it look cool. Because, like, Facebook has the $500 Oculus. They're just ugly, dude. They're ugly. They're not cool. They're not fun. You know what I mean? It's like, it gives me a... it makes me throw up, dude.
I was going to say, I'm now starting to feel old. I remember, like, getting on Atari and Nintendo, and my grandpa would be like, oh, I don't know how you play this crap. And I'm like, Grandpa, come on. I put the VR on for 10 seconds. I'm like...
yeah,
I'm going to hurl.
Yeah.
I can't do this.
We did. My wife and I went to Universal Studios and rode the Quidditch ride at Harry Potter. I did. I was like, you got to get me off of that. I pulled the butt. I was like, I'm going to hurl over everybody. It was so bad, dude. Well,
I couldn't.
I learned about the science behind that. Your brain. I mean, I don't know why some people, it affects some people more than others, but essentially your body is still. And your body is telling your brain that it's still, but your eyes are telling your brain that you're moving. And so
it's a total mind F.
Well, and so your brain thinks that it's hallucinating. So, and the only way typically that you hallucinate is when you take drugs. So that's why you feel like you're
awesome,
which are awesome.
I'm teasing.
But like,
only
but
kind
why,
of,
but like you've been poisoned, right? You've been poisoned. So that's why you feel like you're throwing up, because your brain is telling your body that you got to throw up whatever poison you just ate, because we're hallucinating.
If I knew that VR was just like a drug-free hallucination trip, like I might get back on it, dude.
Dude, that's
good. Tonight I'm like, honey,
let's go.
Put the kids to bed. Getting in this VR.
Hey, funny side note about that. James Nestor wrote a book called How to Get High. And it's through breathing, like holotropic breathing.
Really?
Yeah, I did it once. It was a crazy experience.
And it worked?
Yeah, dude, because the whole idea behind the breathing would be to, like, as a meditation, like a breath work. But yeah, dude, it was trippy. It was crazy.
So I've been very open. I struggle with anxiety and depression, have for a long time. Mm-hmm. One of the things, I don't wear it anymore, but for years, I used to wear this thing called a Kumosu whistle.
Oh, yeah.
But I guess the science goes way back to the Japanese hundreds of years ago. They would breathe through reeds.
Oh, cool.
Right? And just like regular breathing, but it would calm your body. It would.
Yeah, because it was like sips of air.
Yeah.
Like really low air.
So this Kumosu is a necklace that is like a really high quality metal that's designed in a way you put it in your mouth and you breathe through your mouth pretty normally.
Mm, yeah.
But dude, I'm telling you, 10 seconds in, you're like, I feel good. 30 seconds in, you almost kind of feel like,
like loopy,
a little floaty, a little.
Yeah, you get into a flow state. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah.
And well, the breath
that thing helped a ton.
Yeah, because it just, I actually read that book called Breath. So James Nestor wrote Breath. He also wrote How to Get High Now.
Okay.
But yeah, like sips of air where they do just like your breathing technique is like 1 second in, 4 seconds out, and you just kind of like, you know, breath is crazy, dude. A lot of us are really shallow breathers. A lot of us are mouth breathers. Yeah, I didn't know that used to be. I didn't know it was a word. You're such a mouth mouth breathers.
Can I tell you? I'm going to tell you. This is mean of me.
Okay.
I shouldn't be saying this, but if someone's a mouth breather, that is. I probably shouldn't say this, but I genuinely, I'm like, I'm better than that person.
There was a guy.
And the same thing goes when someone walks on their toes and they like bounce. You know what I'm talking about? I'm like, I'm better than that person.
I just remember having a friend.
I'm so nervous that I may bounce. Because I'm like, oh, what does that say about me?
Dude, no, that's funny. Because I used to have a friend who would do that, and that's how he would
bounce or mouth breathe or both.
Mouth breathe. He'd be like, and I was like, dude, close your mouth to breathe. It's like, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, dude, I don't want to hear you breathing.
It's funny, dude. That's funny.
I don't want to feel your hot breath on my neck. Hard pass, bro.
Yeah, dude. Dude, that's so funny. this is one of the things I really was excited for you to come on because I think it's I love interviewing business owners where we don't get to talk too much about business.
I'm a terrible business owner. You don't, well, whatever I do, just do the opposite of, and you'll be much more successful.
Yeah, you'll be fine. Yeah. No, you own a,
you'll be that like rich, arrogant prick.
You'll be, you're the owner of Grounded, though. Very successful marketing company. You guys have killed it.
We're a marketing agency. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know that I'd say we're successful.
Look, but. I think it's all objective. But it is. Some people want to start an agency and they can never get to where you guys are. So, I mean, like,
we had very fortunate origin.
Yeah.
So a very fortunate origin. And I learned a lot from the roles I was in before. Mm-hmm. I was lucky in the sense that I worked for people like Tom Campion at Zoomies, that I got to rub shoulders with people like Scott Paul. Dude's crazy. In all the right ways.
Yeah, when are you going to come on, Scott?
I get Scott on for you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And all his wigs.
Dude, I the only time I met Scott Paul in person, it was at a tacos event at the... where it was... Oh, gosh. It was the first one I ever went to. It was at the... the car museum.
Oh, yeah,
in
South
Jordan.
Uh-huh.
He came up...
On a one wheel, probably.
It was an electric longboard.
Okay.
He had come in through the mall riding an electric longboard. And I was like, Scott, what's up, dude? And he goes, what's up, man? Security's chasing me right now. So I got to go. I was like, good luck, dude. I never saw you.
Yeah.
He's like, no, just tell him I went this way. They'll never catch me.
Yeah. I mean.
And then he left. I was like, that's awesome.
The dude's wild.
And he's got so much damn money, dude.
He's done well for himself.
Yeah, he's done really good.
He taught me. He showed me by example, and then Matt Wunderly and Craig Jarman convinced me that it was a good move to be opportunistic. Yeah. Like, I don't know if you know, but Scott's first company that he sold, he made a good chunk of money on. It was by accident. He went in to try to sell an app to hotels. And he couldn't sell it. So he's like, well, let me just put it in your hotel for a month and see what you think.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, well, you need to provide the iPad. Mm-hmm. He's like, well, crap, I can't just leave an iPad in here and I'm not going to sit in the hotel for a month. So he goes to a friend who bends metal and he's like, will you bend me this metal so I can put the iPad in a locked case? He comes back a month later and the hotel's like, dude, the app sucked. Like, I don't want the app. Where did you get this case? Because this case is rad and we would put them in all of our hotels. And he was like, I own the company. I own a company that makes cases, locked cases for iPads. He sold that for millions of dollars like 4 years later.
he just made it up sick. On the spot. That's awesome. He took that
money, put it into an app called Voto, where you would like vote left or right on like chicken wings or mm-hmm. sliders, whatever. He got 1 million downloads on this app and the app sucked.
Mm-hmm.
But he was using influencers early on in the stage and he had all these companies coming to him like, how are you getting all these downloads? And he tells them like, well, will you point us in the direction of your influencer agency you work with? He's like, I'm not making any money on Voto. I own an influencer agency. Let's do it. He sold that influencer agency to Disney. Disney, dude. So then when I left Vid Army, rest in peace.
Yep.
that wasn't to Levi. That was to the other one.
Yeah.
But you can keep that in. But I was like, I don't know what to do. And Craig and Matt were like two friends and we had an office about the size of this room. And I started getting phone calls and people were like, well, would you do this for me? And would you do this? And I'm like, I don't know. You know, I'd hang up and I'm like, I don't know. And they're like, what the hell's wrong with you? Say yes.
Yeah.
And I just started saying yes to stuff that I probably had no business saying yes to.
Right.
That's how Grounded started. Like,
that's great, dude.
I sold services before I even had a thought of how I would deliver against them.
Yeah. That's okay.
And it worked, right? But I do think moving forward, maybe it's made me lazy, but I'm like, I'm not starting a business unless I can sell some stuff before I start it.
Yeah.
Like that,
I think that's
that
a great idea,
my strategy.
Yeah. I tell people the same thing. They're like, how should I do this? I'm like, so there was a Facebook group and there was a humongous thread of of like, do I pre-sell? Do I, you know, do I get this? And there were so many people in there like, no, get it right before you sell. And I was like, I remember I just wrote,
it's so expensive to do that.
Get your ass out there to sell and sell it. He was like, yeah. I don't know product market fit. I was like, you want to know product market fit?
Can you sell it or not?
Yeah. Will someone buy it right now?
Yeah.
And by the way, friends, family, I don't care. If you have a $100 product and your mom won't buy it for $100, probably shouldn't do it, homie.
Amen, dude. I went onto LinkedIn after VidArmy and I was like, I'm going to do this outsource CMO thing. I got two calls,
yeah.
One from Dixon, I still work with today. They didn't want me to be an outsourced CMO, but they asked me to do some other stuff. And I was like, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Breville, same thing, $1 billion business. I was like, of course. Third phone call is Harmon Brothers. And they're like, okay, we have all these people that want to work with us, can't afford us. So we're bringing in outsourced CMOs. And I'm in my mind, I'm like, well, that's it. Like they're going to, I'll do the outsourced CMO thing for Harmon Brothers.
Yeah.
Like, let's make it happen. And they go, no, we already have a bunch of those, but we need a creative agency that'll charge $3,500 a month and we'll do creative work for all these clients.
Oh,
and
that's
cool, like,
dude.
I was like, oh, that's interesting. And they go, so do you own a creative agency?
You're like, yeah.
Clearly didn't, but I'm like, well, how many brands do you have right now that need creative help? And they're like, 10. I'm like, yes, I own a creative agency. And the first like 2 months, I'm not a designer at all. Dude, I'm colorblind.
Yeah.
I'm creating assets in Canva and selling them to these brands. I've got brands that are like, dude, we love working with a designer. We've been building stuff in Canva. What a joke. And I'm like, yeah, seriously.
Yeah, screw Canva.
but I started the grounded company with 35K MRR without ever even having filed for an LLC.
Yeah, that's great.
It's 2 years later. I still don't even have a website.
Yeah.
Like none
that's
of it.
That's freaking awesome, dude.
We're like, well, we were able to sell it.
Yeah,
and
I think
let's do that.
I think that's so underrated. And by the way, I got a lot of flack for that. Where I posted a video like that one time. I was like, a lot of the people I know who are really successful were in their business by accident. Like they just, oops.
Like it's oops. Accident or it's a willingness. Like Scott, right? Like
Oh yeah.
Oh, what about this iPad holder? He's like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah,
it is an accident, and I don't think what you're saying. I don't take that as a negative.
Right, right.
Statement.
I need to find a better word.
It is accident, but it's also a little bit of it. I think it goes back to networking. Like,
yeah,
Harmon Brothers called me
right
because of networking that I'd done.
Yeah, and they were like, "Can you solve a problem?" And they're like, "Shit, dude, probably yes. Yeah,
I think I can.
I think I can. And by the way, if I can't." Like, I'm still honorable. I'll figure out somebody else who can or whatever.
Yes.
Like, I won't leave you hanging, but let me try
yes.
it. Yeah, let me try
100%.
It. 100%. I've done that before, too, where I said yes to someone. I was like, oh, shit, I can't do this. Hey, homie, I need you to help me. I need a favor. Remember all that time I helped you? I'm calling it in.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah. I think I, like, try to sell something before you try to perfect it. Before
100%.
You try to launch it. And by the way, sell it while you're doing your other thing. Like,
yeah, dude.
Gone are the days of... I work for one company. I can't do anything else. Like that's BS.
Dude. And so many people now are like, yeah, I actually, you know, this podcast actually kind of took off when I started sharing with people that I did it. Cause for a long time I like didn't tell anybody. And I was like, my wife would be like, oh, he does a podcast. I'm like, ah, I don't tell anybody. Like, and I was like, and then one time I had just gotten fired from this sales job because me and the owner were butting heads on processes and he pulled me out and fired me. And I was like, shoot, dude. So I was trying to get this job and the company goes, you know, we work like our software product is for small businesses only. Like it's for small businesses. And I was like, I was like, well, hey, I don't know if this, I just was so desperate for a job at the time. I was like, hey, I don't know if this makes a difference, but I have a podcast with X amount of listeners. It's not a lot, but I only interview small business owners and I could probably sell 10 of these tomorrow if I was hired. And they're like, okay, hung up the next morning. Can you start January 8th and bring
That's
your network
awesome,
with you?
Dude.
I was like,
awesome.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was crazy. And then I got my next job the same way. They're like, how would you do this? And I got a big deal at that job before they laid everybody off, but I got a big deal at my last tech job. Because they were like, we're trying to go after this company. And I was like, well, I'm not going to pitch them. I'm just going to ask the owner to be on my podcast. And then when he comes on my podcast, I'll tell him what I do. And they ended up signing up. And one of the sales guys was like, that's not fair. And I was like, dude, I was like, okay.
Sounds good to me. It had to be fair.
Yeah, I was like, and then they laid us. I was like, and by the way, 2 months later, they laid everybody off. So it like didn't even matter anything.
Yeah. Dude, I mean, I love that. When I was leaving Expert Voice, the CEO and I were like, I was the VP of marketing. There was no CMO. But I was like, Tom, you're never going to make me a CMO. And he's like, yeah, I don't think I will. And I'm like, what are we doing then? Like,
yeah,
what are we doing? And we came to a consensus like, all right, I'll help you for 90 days, try to find my replacement. And in that time, I'm going to try to go find something else. And I happened to be a contributing author for Utah Business at the time.
Oh, that's cool.
So I was like, how can I leverage Utah Business to get me one-on-one time with the people that I want to work with?
Yeah.
So I call them up and I'm like, hey, El, I got this idea. We should interview business founders who have weird, eccentric side hustles. Ryan Smith at the time had been joking about starting Tacos de la Ryan, a little taco cart he had made for his backyard.
Wait, who's this? Ryan Smith?
Yeah.
Ryan Smith?
Yeah.
Qualtrics?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
I mean, this was like,
he was
already crushing. I mean, this was like 2018, 2019. Like this wasn't that long ago, but it was a joke he had on Twitter. Like I'm going to do this.
Tacos Josh, de la Ryan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Josh James from Domo had a restaurant that he had invested in like Australia, New Zealand that he was trying to bring in. Scott Paul had alpaca farming. So I reach out to all of these guys and I'm like, hey, I'm a contributing author for Utah Business. I actually just did the cover story 2 months ago. I want to do a story featuring you. Can we sit down and talk? Who's saying no to that?
No one says no to that.
No one. So nobody. I sit down with Scott and we talk about his alpaca farms for like 10 minutes. And I'm like, by the way, I actually don't give two turds about your alpaca farm. We'll write up the story. You'll sound great. But I know what you're doing at Woolly. I love it. I understand you don't have a CMO. I'm on the hunt for a CMO role. Here's how I can help you. He hired me 2 days later.
Yeah.
Dude, and it was like, that's kind of the networking thing that you're talking about. But like also
giving someone value.
And it also speaks to like having these other things. I'm a big believer, and I tell my team all the time, you got to have lifeboats.
Yeah.
Like when everything went down at Zoomies, I got super lucky that Tom called Skull Candy. I didn't have any other lifeboats out in the water.
Right.
Who knows how long I could have gone. You hear about people who are like remarkably talented people who are going 6 months without a job.
Yeah, even now, dude.
Yeah.
And I just saw the other day, someone was like, this dude had like a published author in whatever. He's like, can't find a job for 7 months. I was like, holy shit. Start something, dude.
Start something.
Good Jesus.
And make sure that next time you're doing something, you've got 3 or 4 other things.
Yeah, like, dude.
If Grounded falters, I could fall back on Mind. I could go
here,
Underground. I know I could call up the dudes at Dixon and be like, okay, I've been a consultant agency for you for 2 years. Bring me on full time. Like, I know that they'd say yes.
Dude, well, and not only that, but like I've had to put my money where my mouth is on that twice. And each time I'm so grateful. But like this podcast for me is like my little life thing. Cause like got laid off at a tech company here, Via. Dude, and I remember everybody was like freaking out. Slack was blown up, text was blown up. They're like, we got laid off. I'm like, what are you guys tripping, bro? I'm going to Disneyland. They're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, bro, I'm going to make one phone call after they end up firing me, because this was before. And they were like, they're going to fire you. I was like, whatever. They're like, I'm like, dude, they're going to fire me. I'm going to make one phone call and it's going to go like this. I need a job, but I'm going to Disneyland for a week with my family. So I'm going to have to start on the day after. And they're going to say, great, see you then. And that's exactly what happened. And it's like, a lot of my friends, unfortunately, didn't have that, but like,
because they didn't put in the work beforehand,
right?
You did,
but yeah, but I was like, dude, I'm not scared. I was like, dude, fire me right now. I'll have a job before I walk out the door. I'll be fine.
I'm a believer that like, my grandpa, one job his whole life.
Yeah, that's
my dad, one industry his whole life.
Yeah, right, that's wild.
And he had like 3 companies he worked for, but they were competitors. It was the same industry. Like,
yeah, you were the same guy. Yeah,
I think for my generation, it's kind of like, well, you could be in a lot of different industries.
Dude,
you can have a lot of different jobs.
I'm a millennial, dude. Like, we don't even believe in. Well, I get weirded out. You're 28. You've had one job. Oh.
Dude, it is kind of a red flag.
I do. I kind of like, whoa, what? Why are you? You don't have any side hustles? You've had one job for 5 years?
Yeah. Well, so you're,
are you okay?
You're complacent?
Yeah. Like, are you chilling or what?
Do you have ambition?
You don't have anything? Like, you don't make content on TikTok?
Yeah.
Nothing?
It's not that hard. But okay, here's the thing. I think kids.
Yeah. They might not even have a job.
Exactly it, dude. They're all going to be
independent freelancers.
Yep. They're going to do a bunch of things for a bunch of people.
They're going to be 1099.
I think there's one thing holding us back from that.
Yeah.
One.
Yeah.
I think that's our health insurance.
Oh.
This country's health insurance is the worst.
Out of everybody.
It's so expensive.
Yeah.
It's so prohibitive if you want to do your own thing.
Yeah.
We figure that out for freelancers.
It's over.
Everyone is their own business.
Yeah.
Not every, right?
You still need
a good chunk of people.
The people who want to be will be.
And they'll make way more money.
Way more money.
They'll have way more freedom.
And we'll have way more. I think our mental health gets better.
I totally agree. And they'll actually have job stability. I mean, I think it's funny that people are like, oh, I work at VR. I work at Expert Voice. I worked for GoPro when it was. I only worked there for 18 months. I was employee 106.
Oh, wow. That's
when I left 18 months later, 1,500 people.
Wow, dude. That's
They've nuts. Gone through layoff after layoff after.
I mean, yeah, so
a
many.
Billion dollar business, right? Yeah. I mean, you see that in tech, you see that everywhere now, but like job security is not
it doesn't a exist thing anymore. Well, and that's why I get so pissed when people are like, you know, that whole quiet quitting thing came out. And I got in some heated debates with like even past guests where they're like quiet quitting, lazy. I'm like, you know, pardon my language. I was like, fuck you, dude. What are you're going to lay me as soon as I don't make sense on the bottom line, you're going to let me go. Why the fuck should I do the same thing for you? How about we just live in reality? You're going to lay me off whenever it's right for you. And I'm going to quit whenever it's right for me. And so how about we just do what this is? You're going to pay me for our time. And then we're just going to live, dude. And actually, nobody has to get mad. We don't have to make it a big deal. And you're just done. And I don't know. That's just me. Like, I'm going to give you 100%. You're going to give me what I...
I'm with you
Maybe
on that.
Maybe that's jaded, but...
No, I don't think it is. But, you know, I do think that there are some... I don't think your approach is jaded. But I do think there's some jaded thoughts out there. And there's also... And maybe now I'm just going to come across like a white boomer who owns my own business.
A boomer. Yeah.
But you know, like we do a 4-day work week, but it's a hybrid 4 days.
Yeah. You told me about this.
Yeah. Yes. So it's
half
funny
of the team's in, half of the team's
out. Half the team's in, half the team's out. But then the team came to me and they're like, we want to take every Friday. And I was like, guys, no.
Yeah.
Like, and I was so nervous. They asked and I like deflected for a week. I'm like, I don't know how to tell them no, because I'm going to be the big bad business owner who only gives a shit about the bottom line.
And yeah,
like
right.
My
right.
money and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And then I was like, I just have to trust my team that I can go be honest with them.
Yeah.
So I walk into, we call it a Knights of the Round Table meeting. It's like our all hands.
Yeah.
And I'm like, look. You guys are asking for every Friday off now. There's 12 of you. Right now you get every other Friday off. If you, Dalton, get every other Friday off, that's 24 days a year.
Yeah.
That you are off in addition to having unlimited PTO, holidays, sick days, work from anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, we got a pretty lax schedule, but that's a month of work. 12 of you, that's a whole year of salary that I'm paying for it that I'm not getting.
Yeah.
And I've said, I'm totally fine with that. Totally fine with that. But if we now go to every Friday, it's 2 full-time salaried employees that I could have on the clock, that I could have helping us grow our business, whether that's a salesperson or
whoever,
I put that money towards advertising, like whatever, to help us grow the business. That's a big, big, pill to swallow. And I could see, I'm like, well, I'm like, well, let's flip this. I'm going to start asking that every other Saturday you work and I'm not going to pay you any extra. And I had team members that were like, fuck you. Yeah. You know, their initial
like,
reaction
no way,
was like,
man, no
what
way.
The hell, man? Yeah. I'm like, But yeah. It's just you making that sacrifice once. With 12 of you every other Friday off, I'm making that sacrifice 12 times.
Right.
Let's just be real.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Let's call it what it is. And as soon as they took a moment to go, oh, wait a second. And I was like, I'm not even saying like, let's cut your pay a 12th.
Yeah.
Which is what a lot of companies do. If they do a 4-day work week, they cut your pay 20%.
Yeah.
Because you're only working 80% of normal hours. But like there is this world where I think employees and millennials and Gen Z and really everyone.
Well, but I think that's
even people my age that don't work for themselves, but they work at Via or whatever. They're like, well, you should do that for us. And it's like, well, I agree to that to an extent. But if I can't keep cash flow coming in and have healthy profit margins, I can't give you benefits.
Yeah, none of this exists anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't I think cover the difference your salary.
I think the difference with what you did and kind of what my approach is like, you at least told people, like most businesses just kind of keep everything under the rug, like, and don't tell anybody. But if, you know, like if I were in that meeting, I'd be like, yeah, he's right. I was probably asking for too much. I'm good. I'll come in. But like, it's, you know, because in my mind, it's like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, I wasn't thinking about it like that. Good point.
Yeah.
But I think you have to have a really mature staff to do that, have that conversation with.
Well, oftentimes I err way too transparent. Like, I don't care who you are on my team. You know about our finances. You know how we sit.
Yeah.
And it more than anything, it's just a blow to the ego to share this publicly. But January was a rough month for us. Like, you work in the agency world, January is the dreaded month. Budgets are changing, teams are flipping, strategies are realigning. Right. And it's kind of like the great agency mix. Like, well, I lost this one and Maddox lost that one, but I picked up Maddox's client and Maddox picked up mine. And
yeah.
But in January, in a 24-hour period, I lost $60,000 a month in billable services. In 24 hours.
Yeah, damn.
And I go to my team and I'm like, look, you guys, because I share openly with the team throughout the year, like you guys understand that we operate at a higher profit margin than most agencies. Most agencies are in the 10% range.
Yeah.
I try to live in the 30s. And it's not that I'm putting that money in my own account, but it's for moments like this.
Right.
So then I'm able to tell them like, look, if we operated at a 10% margin last year, I'd have to make cuts.
Yeah.
I would have to. I couldn't survive. I don't have to right now. And I'm not going to because I believe that we'll get this back. I believe that we can be there. So I want you guys to understand the focus is sales. The focus is bringing in new business. I'm not making cuts. But on this day, if we don't have something changed, I have to start making decisions. And here's the order of every single decision that could make. And I was like, I get it. If you guys don't want to risk that, if you want to use some of this time to go find something else, just in case, like I want you to have a warning. I want you to have heads up. These are all the things we're doing to make sure that we don't have to make that decision.
Yeah.
But if these things don't work, this is where we're at.
Yeah.
We didn't have to. We've grown the team since then. Like we bounced.
That's cool, man.
But you know, like I think we have to be open and transparent with our teams. Like, as a business owner, you want your team to be open with you that, hey, I'm thinking about leaving. Tyler Bender just left Grounded and I'm so happy for her. And she's still a part of the team. And in some ways we've been very creative with that. Cause when you have someone as good as Tyler, you don't like just let them walk.
You gotta find a way.
But I'm glad that it wasn't a shock for me that she knew she could talk to me and be open about it. And I think my team deserves the same. And so I think the way that we interact with employees needs to change.
Well, and that would change your whole focus of how you hire too, because you can't just have I get the other side, which is like, I can't, you know, have that conversation with everybody. Well then, maybe you need to hire the right people that you can, right? And then you go from there. Well, that's freaking awesome, man. All right, Nick, thank you so much.
Dude, thank you. Yeah. I know we ran out of the...
Thanks, bro.
Thank you, man.
Appreciate it.